Blog Talk Radio.
A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper, he amid the flood of mortal wills prevailing. For still our ancient foe doth seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate. On earth is not his evil. Striving would be losing. Were not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be? Christ Jesus, it is He. Lord Sabaoth, His name, from age to age the same. And he must win the battle. And though this world with devils fills should threaten to undo for God has willed His truth to triumph through us. The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure. One little word shall fail. That word above all earthly powers, no thanks to them abideth. The Spirit and the gifts are ours, through Him who it assigneth. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also, the body they may kill. God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever.
Good afternoon, dear saints, and welcome to another broadcast of Reformation News. I'm so glad that you tuned in today, because today I want to present to you Proposition Number 39. Proposition Number 39. Now, yesterday I presented to you Proposition 38. Today, Thursday, Proposition 39. Tomorrow, Sister Marie is going to be with us in studio, as she always is every Friday during the Reformation News broadcast, so that we can present to you a program entitled The Insiders. If you want to know what really goes on in ministries, you have to hear it from those who were once inside those ministries, and that's tomorrow's broadcast. And then, of course, on Saturday, I'm doing Proposition Number 40. We have to hurry up and put out these propositions, because we have a lot happening here on the Reformation News broadcast. So October 31st is soon approaching. We want to have all 95 of these arguments out by October 31st. And Lord willing, with the Lord's help, we'll be able to do so. So let's quickly go over proposition number 38, which was yesterday's, because it leads into today's proposition. And I don't need to do much talking today. I'll let the audio do the talking. But here in proposition number 38, it reads like this. The Joint College of African American Bishops is solely to blame for the spiritual epidemic called the Purple Plague. Now, what is an epidemic? An epidemic is an infectious disease. This just happens to be a spiritual epidemic, a disease of the soul, a disease of the mind. I have coined it the Purple Plague. Why? Well, because there are many in the African American church who have been bit by this bug, and they just can't wait. They're racing. If you remember that horde of pigs, when Legion asked Jesus, the demon Legion, he said, "May we have your permission to go into that herd of pigs?" And Jesus said, "Go ahead." And the demons entered the pigs, and the pigs ran headlong into the ocean and drowned. Well, that's exactly what's happening to these bishops in the African American church who are joining up with Rome. They are getting the purple plague. It is a spiritual disease. It's a spiritual epidemic. And I coined it the purple plague. Why? Because, you see, in the African American church, you have bishops. And if you transfer your allegiance to Rome, then the color that you get to wear as you join Rome, if you are a bishop, is the Roman purple. The Roman purple. The Roman purple. So there are many, 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 many so-called pastors in the black church who want to be hip, who want to be part of the club, who want to be part of this so-called cutting-edge association called the Joint College of African American Bishops. And that's why they're doing everything they can to secure a consecration service. They want to be elevated. They want to be enrobed with the vestures, with the vestments. They want the mitre put on their head. They want the cassock put on their bodies. They want that Episcopal ring on their finger. They want people to actually walk up to them and bend their knee and kiss that ring in adulation. They want that. They want to turn around and they want the crowd to see them in their Roman Catholic garb. It's an epidemic. An epidemic, an epidemic, an epidemic. Now, who started this? Well, four men started this epidemic. Four men. And I'm only reading the book that affords us with that key bit of information. That's why I went out of my way to purchase the book so that I can quote it chapter and page. So, again, proposition number 38, the Joint College of African American Bishops is solely to blame for the spiritual epidemic, the Purple Plague, which has spread to almost all African American churches. In other words, what I'm saying is that if you were to take a census, if you were to go to one African American church after another, you will find that invariably, almost every African American church is being led by an individual called the bishop. And that this bishop, some way, somehow, has bought into the teaching of the Joint College of African American Bishops, whether they're members of the Joint College or they're wannabe members or they're aspiring members. But they've all bought these outfits, these Roman Catholic vestments. And they have these services where they have a chief consecrator and two co-consecrators, a according to Roman Catholic canon law, because they're following canon law. They're not following biblical law. They're not following the canon of Scripture, but they are following the canon of doctrines of demons and doctrines of men, because that's what Roman Catholic canon law is. And so now this purple plague, when now every, and how do we know it's an epidemic? Well, it's widespread. It's widespread. It's all over America. It's widespread. You go from coast to coast in America, and you find invariably almost every African-American church has a bishop for a pastor. And invariably, they are tied, they're connected in some way, form, or fashion to this organization called the Joint College of African-American Bishops. Who is to blame? Who is to blame? For introducing Rome to the African American church community. And it has spread. It has spread. They are cranking out these bishops like it's going out of style. Like it's going out of style. And this is when it started. Let me read to you when it started. It started in 1994. Please, let me read to you from chapter 1, chapter 1 of Bishop J. Delano Ellis's book entitled The Joint, it reads The Bishopric, A Handbook on Creating Episcopacy in the African American Church. In this book of his, on page 17, which is entitled In the beginning, the need. There was a need. According to him, there was a need. There was a need. It reads, one late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the Episcopal office. While traveling, Archbishop Wilbur Sterling McKinley and Archbishop Roy Edmund Brown, both of Brooklyn, New York, along with Bishop J. Delano Ellis of Cleveland, Ohio, were discussing the need for providing assistance and training for the proliferated episcopacy within the African-American Pentecostal community. After lengthy discussion, a telephone call was made to Bishop Paul Sylvester Morton of New Orleans. Bishop Morton expressed his desire to join these men and form this college, and Bishop Ellis was elected to preside over this venture. It goes on to say, the name chosen for this organization by Archbishop Wilbur Sterling McKinley, by Archbishop Roy Edmund Brown, by Bishop J. Delano Ellis, and by Bishop Paul Sylvester Morton was the Joint College of African American Pentecostal Bishops, a.k.a. the Joint College of Bishops. Now, that's, we know that's how it started. That's how it started. One summer afternoon in 1994. Now, let me also read to you just bear with me 1 minute, dear saints of God. I'll find it momentarily. So let me play the audio, and then I'll read this portion of the text out of the book. So now, having read proposition number 38, and we can all conclude that there is no denying that there is a spiritual pandemic in the African American church, and that I am right to call it the purple plague, because now the church is flooded, inundated with bishops. We have more bishops than we have members, it seems like. Now, that's not true, but that's what it seems like. It seems like we have more bishops than we have members. It's like we have more chiefs than we do Indians. Now, who's to blame for the proliferation? Who's to blame for the proliferation? Now, here on page 17, it says, let me read it to you again. It says, one late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the Episcopal office. While traveling, Archbishop Wilbur Sterling McKinley and Archbishop Roy Edmund Brown, both of Brooklyn, New York, along with Bishop J. Delano Ellis of Cleveland, Ohio, were discussing the need for providing assistance and training for the proliferated episcopacy within the African American Pentecostal community. In other words, prior to 1994, there was an explosion of people entering the bishopric in the black church. However, while that may be true that many in the black church were becoming bishops in or prior to 1994, and they were exploding on the scene, not one of them looked Roman Catholic. Not one of them wore the purple cassock. Not one of them wore the scarlet cassock. Not one. Once this organization was formed, what organization is that? The Joint College of African American Bishops. Once that organization was formed, then that organization began to introduce Roman Catholic vestments to the bishops in the African American church. Not only did they start to introduce Roman Catholic vestments, they also introduced canon law and apostolic succession. So these four men brought with them a bag of tricks. In this bag, you had vestments. In this bag of tricks, you had the Roman Catholic canon law, which is nothing more than doctrines of demons intertwined with the doctrines of men. And. In addition to that, they had this crazy notion, this Roman Catholic notion, this Roman Catholic fable and myth called apostolic succession. That's what they introduced to the black church, and that's when the black church became corrupt, leavened, perverted with Roman Catholicism. So yes, when we read page 17, it is true that the episcopacy within the African American Pentecostal community had been proliferated. It had exploded on the scene. Why? Because nobody wanted to stay behind. If this guy's a bishop, I ought to be a bishop. One guy looked at the other guy and said, if he's a bishop, I should be a bishop. He's not better than me. So that's when they all started to call themselves bishops. But then these four decided, who are the four? According to this book, the names are Archbishop Wilbur Sterling McKinley, Archbishop Roy Edmund Brown, Bishop J. Delano Ellis, and Bishop Paul Sylvester Morton. They decided to establish, like what Rome has a joint college. Papal Rome has a joint college, just like pagan Rome had a joint college. And the presiding officer, the chief prelate, if you will, of the pagan College of Bishops was the Pontifex Maximus, the pagan high priest. So we can draw a line. We can say, yes, it is true that bishops in the black church were exploding on the scene prior to 1994, but none of them wore cassocks, none of them wore skull caps, none of them sported the color purple or the color scarlet. None of them sported the colors of the Harlot Church of Revelation 17 and 18. None of them did until these four men established the pagan papal joint college of African American Pentecostal bishops. As a result of introducing the purple cassock, we have the plague called the Purple Plague. The Purple Plague. And what messes these people up, those who get the Purple Plague, is one, they don't want to work. They become lazy. You look at these bishops, they're prima donnas. They don't lift a finger. They won't sweat. Number two, their brain becomes mush. They follow. They never question. It's like they've been lobotomized. They all fall in line. They all take orders from Rome. And they take orders from Rome because Rome has stooges. Stooges are the leaders of the Joint College of African American Bishops. Who actually encourage the other stooges to fall in line. To fall in line. Now, as I do every day, here's the phone number. The number here is 646-564-9730. 646 area code, 564-9730. Here it is. You can call in. You want to talk? We can talk. Is there anybody out there? Is there anybody out there who's a member of the Joint College of African American Bishops who would like to talk this over on the air? I invite you to come on right now. This is Proposition number 39. Please call in. Let's talk. Let's have a conversation. Let's debate this over the air so that our people can see that what I am saying is so. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Well. Having already established that there is a purple plague, let me go on to the next disease. The next disease is scarlet fever. Scarlet fever. Proposition number 39. The Joint College of African American Bishops is solely to blame for the spiritual epidemic now spreading. It's a new epidemic. It's different from the purple plague. It's an upgrade. The Joint College of African American Bishops is solely to blame for the spiritual epidemic now spreading throughout many African American churches called Scarlet Fever. Scarlet Fever. What is Scarlet Fever? Well, Scarlet Fever happens to come upon a person a few years after they come down with the purple plague. See, and if you've had the purple plague, if you've been made a bishop, and if you've been a bishop for 5 years, 10 years, the purple plague starts to develop into the scarlet fever. Now, what is the scarlet fever? The scarlet fever is the spiritual itch that many of those who are plagued with the purple plague get because they want an upgrade. They want to go from bishop to archbishop. They're tired of having no upward mobility. You see, this whole thing is a pyramid scam. This whole thing, as I said before, is an Episcopal babble. You see, the devil is promising upward mobility. It's the same lie the devil gave Adam and Eve in the garden. God knows that the day that you eat of the tree, you will be as gods. In other words, you will get an upgrade. Satan is always promising an upgrade. Well, Satan got a hold of these mush minds when he told them, you know, a pastor, that's all you are? That's all you are, a pastor? No, you should be far more than that. You should be a bishop. You should be a prince in the church. You should be a prince in the church. Come join me. I'll make you a bishop, and you'll look fine in the Roman purple cassock. So they get the purple plague. But after about 5 to 10 years, they get tired of wearing purple. Because what's happening is, you see, there are so many new people getting purple that the ones who've been wearing purple for a while now feel as though they should not be on the same level as the rookie bishops. See, why should I, a person with 10 years of being a bishop, why should I have no upward mobility? Shouldn't I be upgraded? Shouldn't I get another rank? I mean, why should I remain at the same level as this guy who was ordained bishop last month? When we come together, I'm a bishop, he's a bishop. But that's not fair. I've been a bishop for 5 years. I've been a bishop for 10 years. Isn't there another level for me? Isn't there another level? Because that's what this is all about. This is about upward mobility. The Roman Catholic Church is about upward mobility. Why? Because the Roman Catholic Church is following Satan's pattern. So they get the scarlet fever. What's the scarlet fever? Well, now I want to be archbishop. Because it's not fair that I should be on the same level with these new rookie bishops, and that I should be put in the same category with them when I've been a bishop now for a decade. So we have to create something for them. Why? Because they got this fever. What's it called? Upward mobility. What's it called? Scarlet fever. I want to have another color. I want to have an upgrade in color. And the upgrade in color is scarlet. Does it make sense now, saints? Does it make sense now? Does it make sense now? Now, let me show you how this works. Let's go back to page number 17. I've been reading this page over and over again, but as I read it, I decipher it. I decipher it for my listening audience. Now, you may think I'm being redundant. I'm not being redundant. I'm just trying to read it to you as it's on this page, as I got it in the book. I mean, I'm reading what's in the book. I didn't write this. Bishop J. Delano Ellis II wrote this. This is supposed to be his Magna Carta. This is supposed to be, his greatest work. This little dopey, asinine book is supposed to be his greatest achievement. Well, this is what he writes. Chapter 1, in the beginning, the need. There was a need. He writes, again, I'm sorry that I'm reading it again, but it's important because we're peeling the onion. There's layers to this. He says, one late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the Episcopal office. While traveling, Archbishop Wilbert Sterling McKinley and Archbishop Roy Edmund Brown. Now, you can see that the first two men mentioned here are archbishops. What is the color for the archbishop? It is scarlet. It is scarlet. Now, both of these archbishops were from Brooklyn, New York, along with Bishop J. Delano Ellis of Cleveland, Ohio. Now notice you have two archbishops, one bishop. The one bishop is J. Delano Ellis. He's from Cleveland, Ohio. The two archbishops are from Brooklyn, New York. Then, as I read a little down, it says, after a lengthy discussion, a telephone call was made to Bishop Paul Sylvester Morton of New Orleans, Louisiana. Bishop Morton expressed his desire to join these men in forming this college, and Bishop Ellis was elected to preside over this venture. So please note, on page 17, there are two men with scarlet fever, and there are two men with the purple plague. The two men with scarlet fever are the archbishops, for that is their color. The two men with the purple plague are Bishop Paul Sylvester Morton and Bishop J. Delano Ellis, because purple is the color of bishops. If you follow the code of canon law, it's the how-to book for the Roman Catholic Apostate Church. And it tells you archbishops are scarlet, bishops are purple. Now, if you look at our slide presentation, as you listen to this broadcast, you will notice that I have several pictures there showing you in one picture those who are dressed in scarlet and those who are dressed in purple. I don't make this up. These are pictures from Rome. These are pictures when Rome is in session. And there you have it. These are authentic Roman Catholic pictures. And when the prelates, whatever their rank may be, visit Rome, they must put on the colors representative of what? Of their rank. Of their rank. Of their rank. So you see what happens, my dear brothers and sisters. After you get the purple plague, then a few years later, once they start elevating and consecrating and bringing in new bishops into the group, you kind of feel, well, you know, I've paid my dues. I've been a bishop. I've been a good bishop. I've been a robotic bishop. I've been a good boot-licking bishop. I mean, I've done everything I've had to do to be recognized and honored among the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops. I think now I've earned the right to go from bishop to archbishop. In other words, you got scarlet fever. That's what you got. You got the bug. Because now, it's not about serving Christ, and it's not about serving the flock. It's about serving you. You are serving your own interest. And now it's about time that you were honored and that you got elevated. So the same way you went around for 1 year calling yourself bishop designate or bishop elect, now you are archbishop designate or archbishop elect. That's what you are. And right here in the first page, you find the two carriers of scarlet fever and you find the two carriers of the purple plague. Now, you see how it's laid out there? Do you see how it's laid out? Four men, one late afternoon, four men decided to put together this monstrosity of an organization called the Joint College of African American Bishops. Two had scarlet fever, two had the purple plague. You see, those are the seeds sown into the ground. Those are the seeds. Let me read to you. And I'm going to read to you from page 61. Now, it says, page 61. This is the College of Bishops colors. The members of this college have the distinction of the same vestment as that of the presiding bishop, with one reservation: bishops may not wear the scarlet slippers. See, only the presiding bishop can wear the scarlet slippers. Ooh, scarlet slippers, just like the Pope. The Pope wears the scarlet slippers. Yes, he does. The Pope wears the scarlet slippers. Now, it goes on to say, the highest color of this office is Roman purple with regard to the cassock. Now, since there are five ranks of bishopric recognized by our college, notice there are five ranks. My brothers and sisters, there are how many ranks? Five. You see, it's upward mobility. There are five ranks of the bishopric recognized by our college. It is needful to make clear the color designation within each rank with regard to the shamir as follows: with regard to one article of clothing, one piece of the vestment, and that's the shamir, as follows: the presiding bishop wears a scarlet. The ordinary diocesan bishop wears the scarlet. The coadjutor bishop wears the scarlet. Now, three on top get to wear the scarlet: the presiding bishop, the ordinary or diocesan bishop, and the coadjutor bishop. Those three wear the scarlet. Now, the suffragan bishop wears the Roman purple, and the auxiliary bishop wears the Roman purple, and all other overseers / elders are to wear the black. The black. But only the presiding bishop gets to wear the scarlet slippers and the scarlet pantyhose. Yes. You see, my brothers and sisters, now let's go to Revelation 17, verse 4. Revelation 17, verse 4. Because the harlot, who's got all kinds of diseases and who carries all kinds of epidemics. That's right. You deal with a prostitute and you're dealing with everything she's carrying, unknown and known. So these are the colors. These are the colors of the harlot church. Revelation 17, verse 4. And the woman was arrayed in purple and in what? Scarlet. Those are the colors, purple and scarlet. Now, prior to 1994, do you know what the colors were in the Pentecostal church? Do you know what the color was? White. I was born again in a Pentecostal church. I was reared in a Pentecostal church. Most of my ministerial life, I have served in a Pentecostal church. And our color was what? White. We didn't have purple. We didn't have scarlet. No. Now, speaking of the bride of Christ, speaking of the church, it says in Revelation 19:8, and to her, the church, the bride of Christ, was granted. You see, my Pentecostal forefathers, who had very little schooling, who many of them never got out of high school, my Pentecostal forefathers could read the Bible. They didn't know Greek, they didn't know Hebrew, they didn't know Latin, but they could read English. And my Pentecostal forefathers would read Revelation 19:8, and they would read, and it says, to her, the bride of Christ, was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white. That's why we Pentecostals wore white. And then it says, and he said unto me, the angel said unto John, write, blessed are they which are called unto the marriage supper of the Lamb. The Lamb, what color is the Lamb? White. The bridegroom is dressed in white. His bride is in white. Nobody's in purple. Nobody's in scarlet. Only the Hoover church, only the apostate church is dressed in purple and in scarlet. So notice, why is it that there's scarlet fever in the black church? Because some men want two diseases. Some gals want two diseases. They just don't want to go through life just experiencing the purple plague. No, they want another epidemic. They want scarlet fever. They want scarlet fever. It's not enough. It's not enough. You know, because before you can get, you just can't become a minister in the black church anymore and just, you know, become an archbishop. No. See, you got to go through the ranks. You got to go first, according to this little book now, the way it is set up, you start wearing black. Black is the color of death. That's why it's so prominent among Roman Catholic priests. It's the color of death. It is a church, is the Roman Catholic Church, and I say that in quotes. It is a church that's obsessed with death. They can't stop looking at the bodies of dead popes. They can't stop carrying around the bones of dead people. Most of their relics are body parts of the dead. This is why they wear black, in celebration of death. The Vatican, you know what the Vatican is? The Vatican is Latin for cemetery. The whole Vatican complex is built on an Etruscan cemetery. The whole Vatican complex is sitting on a mountain of bones. Google it. Check it out in Wikipedia. So, first you start out with black because you're an overseer. Then you become an auxiliary bishop. Well, that's when you get the purple cassock. And not just the purple cassock. This book tells us it must be the, you see, it, listen. It can't be the black community purple. No. It's got to be Roman purple. Roman. It's in the book. It's got to be Roman purple. Then when you go from auxiliary bishop and you get promoted after bootlicking for a couple of years, then you become a suffragan bishop. Can you find the word suffragan in the Bible? No, you can't find it. Then after bootlicking for a couple of years, then you become a coadjutor bishop. Then you get scarlet. Then you become an ordinary or a diocesan bishop. You get scarlet. Then you become the presiding bishop. But you see, what separates the presiding bishop from all of these other bishops is the presiding bishop can put on the scarlet slippers. So from head to toe, he's scarlet. You see, the other ones are working towards being completely scarlet, but it's when you become the presiding bishop that from head to toe, you're scarlet. Scarlet fever. But you see, here in Revelation 17:4 says, and the woman, the prostitute church, was arrayed in purple and in scarlet color. This is the woman that is judged. Now, again, let me prove to you, my dear brothers and sisters, because, listen, we don't need to beat this senseless. This is simple. As you can see, this is simple. This is quite simple. We've made the case already. What other case, my brothers and sisters, what other case? Do I need to say more? Honestly, do I need to beat this dead horse? I mean, the horse is down. Do I need to keep beating it to see if it gets up? The case is already made. I made the case. The case was simple to make. Those of us who are Pentecostals, those of us who are traditional Pentecostals, you know that I speak truth. Back in the day, we wore, at convocation, we wore white. 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 Why? Because white was the color of what? Holiness. We didn't wear purple and we didn't wear scarlet because according to scripture, those are the colors of the harlot. Remember Rahab the harlot? Remember Rahab the harlot in the book of Joshua? What did she put out of her window? What did Rahab the harlot put out of her window? A scarlet thread. A scarlet thread. You see, it was to let the people in town know, or not the people in town because they knew, but you see, if anyone had come into Jericho and they wanted to know where the whorehouse was, there was the scarlet thread. Scarlet thread. The scarlet thread. In the days of Rome, prostitutes wore purple and scarlet. And why purple and scarlet? Well, you had money. As a prostitute, you made a good living. So you can have these fancy clothes. Purple and scarlet. Now, it doesn't mean that everyone who wore purple and scarlet was a prostitute. But you see, the purple and scarlet pointed to different kinds of lifestyle. You had to be a rich person in order to be able to afford. The purple dye was hard to get. It was derived from oysters. And you needed a lot of these oysters to really dye an entire garment. This was hard stuff to do. So only the rich could afford this. Only the rich. And, of course, the prostitutes fell into that category because you were making money. You know, if you had 10 johns or 20 johns a day, you were rolling in the dough. Rolling in the dough. So, my brothers and sisters, my dear brothers and sisters, how many of you listening to the sound of my voice today? And I know steam is coming out of ears. I know if you could, you would beat me to the ground. I know it. But you know I speak the truth. You know I lie not. You know that I've proven it to you from the scriptures. And not just from the scriptures, but I pulled it out of this book. I pulled it out of this book. I have pulled it out of this book. Now, what will you or what can you say for yourself? You who are dressed in purple, you who are dressed in scarlet, am I not speaking the truth? Have I made anything up? Have I not read it out of this book? This book, which is entitled The Bishopric, A Handbook on Creating Episcopacy in the African-American Pentecostal Church. You don't have to create anything. All you have to do is follow episcopacy from the New Testament. You don't have to create anything. You just have to follow the pattern, follow the template. Jesus and his disciples already modeled it. Paul and Peter wrote about it extensively. They left us the pattern. They left us the template. Nothing needed to be created. All that was needed to be done was for us to apply the word. To apply the word. To apply the word. But we have failed to apply the word because we're sick. We have an infectious disease. It's a spiritual infectious disease. It affects the soul and it affects the mind. And Satan has conned a many people. Satan has conned a many. And it's sad. Because who suffers, my dear brothers and sisters? Who suffers? The sheep suffer. The sheep suffer. When the shepherds misbehave, the sheep suffer. The sheep are the ones who are hurt the most. Not to say that the pseudo bishop and the pseudo archbishop don't suffer, they do. But not to the extent of the poor sheep, who are abandoned. The poor sheep abandoned. Now, let me just prove to you. I'm just gonna play an audio. One audio. I want to show you how this disease, these two diseases have multiplied. Two diseases. First of all, let's talk about the disease of the purple plague. Now, listen to this audio, because you will see how this brother makes my point, and I make his point, that bishops in the black church are multiplying like cockroaches. Men and women in the black church are getting the purple plague because it has become an epidemic. Let's listen to this very important audio.
Good morning, Church Folk Revolution. PimpPreacher.com is your boy TJ. I'm coming to you with another video at PimpPreacher.com. Still love my banner, right? Want to talk to you today about Neil Ellis, right? This bishop, the so-called Bishop Neil Ellis, right? And his decision to make Juanita Bynum a bishop. That's right. The Bishop Factory is still cranking them out. Right? And this decision, we found out about this 2 days ago, right? From one of Juanita Bynum's sites. Someone tagged me in it from one of her sites. Say, TJ, you got to check this out. Neil Ellis. He's going to make Juanita Bynum part of the class of 2016, right? She's going to be a faith bishop too. And, like I said on our radio show.
You see, now who's Neil Ellis? Neil Ellis happens to be the second in command, or was the second in command. He was the second in command at the Full Gospel Baptist Fellowship, where Paul Sylvester Morton, one of the four founding members of the Joint College of African American Bishops, was the presiding bishop. Now, Paul Sylvester Morton had decided to retire. And so, Bishop Neil Ellis thought that if Paul Morton retired, that he would, since he was the next in line, that he would become the next archbishop of the organization, and he would go from purple to scarlet because he had been faithful. But Paul Morton didn't place him as the top guy. So Neil Ellis felt scorned. Why? Because for quite some time, Neil Ellis, who had already experienced the purple plague, wanted to be an archbishop. He wanted to be an archbishop. He was just biding his time. He knew at some point in time Paul Sylvester Morton, one of the original founders, was going to retire and that he was a shoo-in. He was a shoo-in. But when he didn't get the spot, he felt jilted. And so he started his very own organization. So please note that Neil Ellis broke away from Full Gospel as a renegade, went and started his own bishop factory, his own, bishop diploma mill, started giving out bishoprics to different people. It's laughable. Why? Again, the purple plague. Now, when he did this, when Neil Ellis started to make people bishops, then he made himself the archbishop, and so that's where he got the scarlet-colored robe. See, he basically did a Henry VIII. You know, Henry VIII wanted to marry a new wife. Henry VIII, the King of England, had his eye on this new chick. And he went to Rome and says, I need you to give me a divorce. You know, we're tight. I'm tight. I'm the King of England. I'm tight with Rome. Just give me an annulment. Just give me a divorce. And the Church of Rome said, no, we're not going to give you a divorce. So Henry VIII says, okay, I got an itch and I got to scratch it. I want to marry this woman and I am going to marry her. So what I'll do is I'll break away from Rome and I'll start my own church. And I'll appoint an archbishop to that church, which is the Church of England. He'll give me a letter of divorce, and I can go satisfy my flesh. So basically, Neil Ellis is a current-day Henry VIII. He just wanted to go. He just had to be the guy on top. And when they wouldn't give it to him, and when he was denied, he just broke away and started his own thing, and started to ordain bishops under him. That's what this brother's talking about. So let's listen again.
Good morning, Church for Revolution. PimpPreacher.com is your boy, TJ. Coming to you with another video at PimpPreacher.com. Still love my banner, right? Want to talk to you today about Neil Ellis, right? This bishop, the so-called bishop Neil Ellis, right? And his decision to make Juanita Bynum a bishop. That's right. The bishop factory is still cranking them out, right? And this decision, we found out about this 2 days ago, right? From one of Juanita Bynum's sites. Someone tagged me in it from one of her sites. Say, TJ, you got to check this out. Neil Ellis he's going to make Juanita Bynum part of the class of 2016. Right? She's going to be a fake bishop too. And, like I said on our radio show, she's all excited. She's excited. Oh, I'm going to be a bishop. I'm going to be a bishop. And I'm sitting here saying, bishop over what? What are you going to be a bishop of? That was my first question. And my second question is, who gave Neil Ellis any type of authority to create a bishop? Or to consecrate a bishop,
Now, did you hear him? Did you hear what he had to say? And that's my whole argument. All of this is fake. All of these organizations, and they're all running amok. None of them will submit. The four guys who started this thing started a disease. They started an epidemic. And now people under them won't submit anymore. They'll go start their own thing. And now they're multiplying bishops like cockroaches.
The ridiculous scam of church right here. You're watching it play out. You're watching this guy, Neil Ellis, issue out these titles. You know, he's like, Neil Ellis is like a blackjack dealer, right? He's just dealing these things out. He's just dealing these titles, and whoever wants a title right now, they can have one. We watch a gospel singer turn pastor become bishop, right? All over the span of a year. You know,
it happened faster in Rome. If you had the money, you can go from the street and be an archbishop if you can pay Rome for the position. In the Middle Ages, if you had the money to buy an archbishopric, you can come off the street. You can be an actual nobody, and you can buy it's called simony. The Roman Catholic Church was not only selling indulgences to get people out of purgatory, they were also selling church positions. It's nothing new.
This fast track to bishop. And, you know, we've had countless conversations about Juanita Bynum and countless conversations about Marvin Sapp, but this conversation really this morning is about this guy, Neil Ellis. For those of you who don't know him, this was the dude that was right up under Paul Martin, and then Paul Martin, over a year or so ago, selected this Bishop Walker guy to take over for him. And this little hurt scorn guy, you know, is another one of these scorned side chicks, Neil Ellis. Yeah, you can see how devastated he was when Paul Martin made the announcement that Walker was going to be the new presiding bishop of the full gospel nonsense, the full gospel Baptist fellowship, right? So, because Paul Martin's retiring, right? So Neil Ellis just automatically assumed that he was going to get it, right? Anybody who kissed that much butt for that long should get it, you know, in church world. Well, Paul Martin broke all of the normal rules of church and gave it to somebody else, and this guy breaks off and goes starts his own thing. So out of bitterness and hurt, you get this United Global denomination, right? That's where it comes. It came out of bitterness and hurt, right? Sort of like an ex-girlfriend starting a church. What are they going to preach about, you know? And not only did he, because he has a right. If he wants to start his own little group, he has a right to start groups. People have been starting these church groups forever. Neil Ellis didn't invent starting a church group. Right? Church of God in Christ, Charles Mason, started a church group. That's all these are church groups. Right? So he breaks off. He has a right to start his own church group. The problem that I have with Neil Ellis is what he calls himself now that he has his own group.
Right.
His name, now, get this. Brace yourself for this. Because in the world of apostles and prophetess and bishops and, you know, the senseis and all of these different church names, we now have a name that's perhaps... We now have a title that's perhaps the most ridiculous of all of them. Bishop Ellis calls himself His Grace. That's what they call this dude. His Grace. Because just simply being bishop, you know, that has lost its... right? So now he just simply calls himself His Grace. And others within this United Global are calling this guy His Grace. And I'm sitting here saying to myself, how did we get here? You know,
Well, I can answer that for you. I know how we got here, because it says on page 17 of this book, in the beginning, The Need, one late afternoon in the summer of 1994, four men were traveling from New York to Philadelphia for the purpose of purchasing vestments and insignia for the Episcopal office, and they allowed the demonic genie to come out of the bottle. That's how we got here. and two of the men were archbishops. In other words, they were carriers of scarlet fever, and two other men were bishops, and they were carriers of the purple plague, and that's how we got here. And that's why Neil Ellis goes around and he wants people to address him as His Grace. Why? Because now he's the archbishop of his own organization. You see, all those years that he was a bishop and he had the purple plague was wearing off and he was starting to get scarlet fever because that's the next level. And you know what happens when you get scarlet fever? If your brain was mush when you got the purple plague, it's even mushier when you get scarlet fever, because then you come around and you start having people, including your own wife, address you as Your Grace, Your Holiness, Your Eminence. I mean, that's what these guys, there are other bishops. He's not the only one. There are other bishops who want you to, archbishops, they want you to refer to them as Your Eminence, Your Holiness, Your Grace. These are people now with scarlet fever. So if your brain was turned to mush when you had the purple plague, it's mushier now. Because now you're calling yourself by exalted titles. You're delusional. If you have people call you Your Holiness, even your wife and kids don't know you're holy. They know you're not holy. Everybody, but you're having them. You're forcing them to call you Your Holiness. A rotten sinner. A delusional sinner. That's because you got scarlet fever. You see, now, everybody doesn't have scarlet fever, but because the church is really plagued with the purple plague. But you know what's going to happen? All of these people who have the purple plague right now, which are the great majority, pretty soon they're going to start getting the itch of scarlet fever, and you're going to have all of these bishops go to archbishops. Now you're really going to have madness in the black church. Because once a new wave of junior bishops come in, the bishops that are in the church now are going to want elevation. And that's when they get the next disease called scarlet fever. Then they're going to want to be made archbishop. They're going to be jealous. They're also going to want to be called Your Highness, Your Grace, Your Holiness, Your Eminence. And who introduced this mess? He says, notice his question. Listen to this.
This guy, His Grace. And I'm sitting here saying to myself, how did we get here? You know, how do we get to the point where we're calling some guy His Grace?
You'll find that truth in the book, The Bishopric, A Handbook on Creating Episcopacy in the African American Church. You'll find it in chapter 1 on page 17 in the beginning. You'll find it right there. That's how we wound up here. And now scarlet fever is the rage. Because for now many, many years, there's a great many men and women sitting in those churches who have been bishop too long. They've been wearing purple too long, and now they want to be elevated. Now they want what Neil Ellis made for himself, what Henry VIII made for it. They want that too. They want to indulge their flesh. And come hell or high water, they're going to achieve the position of archbishop. They're going to achieve that. If that means leaving some fellowship that they're tied to, so that they can go create their own thing and set themselves up as archbishop. You see, they're going to do whatever they need to do because they need to scratch that itch. And they're not going to be left behind, and they're not going to be denied. Well, my dear brothers and sisters, that'll do it for today. I will be back tomorrow with Sister Marie. Listen, you don't want to miss tomorrow's broadcast, The Insiders. And if you missed last week's Insiders, you got to listen to last week's. It was phenomenal. This week's Insiders will be just as riveting. So tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sister Marie's going to be in the house. And I, yours truly, will be her sidekick tomorrow. I'll be in studio, but it's really her broadcast. And then I'll be back. I will be back on Saturday to present to you, my dear brothers and sisters, Proposition number 40. As we make our way to presenting to you a 95th thesis. God bless you, saints.
Mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper, he amid the flood of mortal wills prevailing. For still our ancient foe doth seek to work us woe, his craft and power are great. And armed with cruel hate, on earth is not his equal. Did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be? Christ Jesus, it is He. Lord Sabaoth, His name, from age to age the same. And He must win the battle.